Welcome to the Level 5 Podcast, Episode 6, with the man, Eric Reynolds. You can learn more about Eric at his website, Level 5 Consulting. That's LVL, the number 5, consulting.com. And I almost started the show saying this was our last episode, because I see what you're doing now. You're coming up with all this stuff I suck at, and then you want to talk about it. Yeah. So that's how that is.
I mean, I'll be busy after this one.
Yes, you will. So we're not canceling the show, because if you're going to talk about all the stuff I'm really bad at, we could go forever, man. How are you this week?
Doing well. Thanks. How about you?
Good. This is an important episode, because we're talking about the whole external sales process, and we're talking about a lot of different things. And people could say, well, what do you mean, Willoughby, you suck at that? Well, I think sometimes the more you improve, the more you realize, wow, there's a lot of improvement that needs to happen here. And we're talking about the lifeblood, really, of small businesses, or any businesses when it comes down to it.
Absolutely.
Why is this episode so important, and how are we going to dig in today?
Yeah, we get into the actual mechanics of defining what goes on when you engage your customers. So how do you take someone from that they exist to a customer that's part of your business? And there is a level of definition here that's necessary. If it's not here, you're really just rolling the dice. You don't have a lot of good information. Sort of what you're working off of is probably anecdotal at times. And the truth behind these pieces is, we've talked in the past, we've talked about energy leadership. We've talked about the levels of energy. We've talked about some other leadership books as we went through the previous podcasts. Those are all critical aspects to the leadership side of succeeding in business. These are the wheels on the vehicle, if you will. We'll switch to a vehicle analogy this week. Without this, the car doesn't move, or if it does, you don't even know why it's moving.
I'm not intimidated by this question. I just want to try to get it really, really get it right. I'm a culture guy. I believe culture is so important. I think there's a lot of new beliefs starting to happen in the business world. Some of those beliefs, including culture, can sometimes take you away from what you're really there to do, mm-hmm. which is, you know, solve problems for people, you know, build that relationship. And relationship's a word that scares me to death when you talk business, because I think it's one of the most misused words ever to talk about in business. But if you don't have this together, if you don't have this right, you're going to struggle when you talk about the external sales process. And there's a lot of things that can get in the way. Now, I'm not sure there's a question there yet, but take my ramblings.
We're getting there, Bob.
But take my ramblings and go with that. There are a lot of things that can get in the way.
Oh, there's tons of it. And what you find is that you have difficulty onboarding individuals. If they do come on, they may succeed only because of a previous experience and individual A is doing something entirely different than individual B, as is individual C. And the expectations aren't being set on the language you speak around your sales and your business. You know, you want to develop a common vernacular, for example, that particular prospect is in the proposal stage and I've committed to that deal. So when you say that in an organization, everyone knows what that means. And that's why this is establishing this, in some ways, technical language, not so much a leadership language, but a technical language of, okay, we're going to talk in facts, and when everybody speaks it this way, we all know what it means.
One of the things we've done here, man, there are so many questions coming at me. Seriously, I want to make sure we have the clarity. But one of the things we've done inside these walls since being back at Ozarks Dynacom is really try to make those titles mean something, and mean something for us. And we won't go into all of them, but I want to talk about one. You know, usually you have the closing call, right? I mean, it comes right down to it. Is Eric going to do business with us? Are we going to do business with Eric? Are we going to, you know, is this marriage going to happen?
That's right. Are the church bells ringing for a reason?
But I didn't like closing call, because if you go to a real estate agent and it's a closing call, it really kind of is, because if everything's done, everything's done. We're just getting started. So we kind of change that to implementation call, and we have a little fun with it. We're saying, look, we're not trying to dodge that this is sales. We're not trying to dodge that we're asking you for dollars. But when you commit to those dollars in this particular industry, we're just holding hands and start walking down the road. This is implementation. It's not, okay, that's great, done, move on to the next. We're just getting started. Any of that make sense? And can you get too cute with all that stuff?
Sounds like you're definitely trying something there I've not heard of previously. So I think what you have to have in that exchange, and if I hear you right, this is the point at which someone has said yes to the business and you are transitioning them to the operation side, right?
Right.
And so there does need to be a handoff and an exchange there, because the first thing you can do wrong with a new client relationship is give the appearance that there is no more sort of business or a revenue side relationship that's happening there. It's like, well, thank you for signing. These people will take good care of you. Good luck and God bless.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong move in that situation. So some organizations have, a difference between a hunter salesperson and then an account executive that comes in that's also responsible for getting revenue from those clients and can maintain the relationship from there. Others, salespeople stay involved through the entire process. So, I think to your point, whatever you can do to make the handoff smooth so that the customer feels like I'm going from one level of competency and trust, because they only bought from that salesperson because they people buy people, right? I trust them. And transfer that over to the operations team. Okay, I'm in good hands. I trust these people now. That's what you want to accomplish in that call.
Okay. So let's get back to this and talk about this. One of the things you talk about is without some process and without some definition, you know, you're really blind going through this process.
Yes.
Now, you talk to anybody that's been in sales longer than a few minutes, and they're going to be able to say, well, I've got the CNA, and then I do the proposal, and then I do the close or implementation, whatever you call it, and then service and follow up and all of those things. So that, on a big picture, is what you're talking about, but you want them to go deeper and be clearer about that?
Yeah, so I'm taking this discussion from the perspective of a GM or a CEO or even a head of sales, someone who's responsible for sales. You want to be able to know that when you're looking at your pipeline, so if I'm here and Steve, here's my pipeline that I'm giving you, this is how I'm tracking. You want to have just the slightest bit of faith in that. You want to know that that person wasn't up the night before putting all their information in the CRM to make it look good. So the snapshot that you get handed seems like it's probably feasible, right?
Yeah.
No, you really want to understand the facts around what you're looking at and have a trustable, reliable process so you know that it's not, full of hopium, essentially, right? It's like, well, if everything goes my way, that's going to happen, kind of thing. And that's all the deals that you're looking at. So it's really, when I say you're blind, you're really fumbling through a dark room if you, A, don't have that level of trust, and B, don't have an internal agreement with your folks that this is how we talk. This is how we speak about deals. So there's no mistaking what's going on.
And when you're talking about speaking about deals, you're not just talking about the sales team. You're talking about the office, everybody that's going to implement that, or everybody that is standing by. If the for when the sales team actually makes that sale, gets that thing going. We can all talk in terms of understanding each other.
Yeah, it's critically important, and I'm sure any operations group as part of a company will appreciate this statement. They need to know what's coming, and they need to have visibility into what that looks like as far as the bandwidth it's going to require on their team. You can have a fantastic quarter and cripple a company because the operations team can't deliver and the sales team sold as if they could deliver. There would be no delay in getting those particular things rolling. So in that sense, everybody has to understand if I'm the ops lead and I'm looking at this and I'm looking at the pipeline, for example, and saying, wow, normally per month we get 3 deals. Looks like we're going to get 5 coming up at the end of May. I need more resources. I need to bring on some folks. And in fact, I could even look at the pipeline out into the future and say, looks like things are going to be pretty good for a while. So maybe instead of a part-time person, I'll make that a full-time hire. It gives visibility and intelligence to everyone in the company.
So let's talk to that business that saying, okay, Eric, you got my attention. We've got to do something with sales. We've got to, and that's really where it always starts, right? We got to do something with sales, but that's really not what you're talking about here. Yes, it is sales related, but really it's the communication key across the whole company. And while we were joking, I was very serious about that because we talk a lot about processes and systems. And if you were to watch everybody's eyes and everybody's reaction when I say those terms, processes and systems, they kind of it's kind of like that, that throw
chest
up
tightening.
Start. Yeah, on the chest tightens. And they're tired of talking about it and not implementing it.
Right.
I mean, when it just to be totally transparent, it's like we talk a good game of processes and systems. When are we going to really get to playing that game?
Yeah.
And it's tough because it's not something that as GM I can go, okay, this is done now. It's really going to come from below and at the top that hopefully we meet in the middle and really mean something to the team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're basically saying I can't have all these processes and systems that refine and help the revenue of our company get in the way of what I do every day, right?
Yeah,
It's that type of mentality. And I understand that. I have been in corporations as an employee where I have been beaten over the head by processes that will be implemented as part of the new, right, in that situation. And by the way, the new old that we did last year. Forget about that. We're changing everything now.
For a couple of years, then we'll bring it back.
Yes, that's right. And we'll circle back once we realize our mistake. So when we look at these things, I've laid out some simple things today that need to be a component of what you would think of as your internal sales process. So You break it in a nutshell, if you will, with the sales organization. You have an internal sales process. Okay, we have an external sale. We're talking about the external sales process today. How do my sales individuals and organization interact with prospective clients? Internal sales process is everything I do inside the company that client doesn't even have visibility on, but I need to get these steps done. For example, I need to put the information in the CRM so operations can actually have some vision into how many deals are coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then aside from that, you also have behaviors. And we've talked about behaviors in the past and documenting those. That can be an entirely separate podcast as it relates to the sales team. So when you look at creating these, you do want to keep them simple. You don't want to get overcomplicated. You've asked me several times in this podcast, Eric, how does that first call go with someone when you talk with them?
Mm-hmm.
When I first started doing this, it was me standing up with them on speakerphone and banging my head against the wall, going, no. But understanding over time that individuals have basically tried to do their best efforts to get some structure in place. And they could have either gotten hyper specific because people weren't following the rules, so they're going to put more rules on them, or super vague so that there's no real certainty in how things are getting done within the company.
And I've done both of those, and they're very, very confusing and frustrating to everybody.
Yes, that's just it. And they're not scalable. That's the key. If you really want to grow your business, and I don't know why we would ever have a conversation unless that's the case, you have to keep one eye on scalability. And once you have, in this case, an external sales process down, you now have the guide ropes to train individuals on how to talk sales in your company. And not only that, but to indicate where your deals are seriously. So not just sitting up the night before and cleaning it up at 9 o'clock before the meeting the next morning kind of thing. So that first conversation that I have now, I usually find out that they may not even have a way of tracking these things officially. That's not uncommon. So you shouldn't feel alone if that's the case. But there are simple things that you can put in place to begin to have incredible visibility on what your business looks like it's going to do revenue-wise.
And what you talk about really at first, I mean, you talk about keeping it simple. You talk about, you know, having the level of process definition. But really, as we talked about a few minutes ago, it is those stages that takes people from we just met to raving fan situation, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You go in those scenarios. And for example, when you look at stages, I've seen individuals and companies, you know, put 9 stages in a sales pipeline. It's way too many. If you would say, well, our business is unique, I'll challenge you to sit down with me and go through those stages. And I bet we can combine some of them. I'm not saying that what you know about your business is incorrect or, you know, what you know is not is what you don't know type situation. But when you look at grouping them, you want to keep them as simple as possible. So, for example, qualification, discovery, proposal, contracting, and won or lost, right? That's a sum total of 5 stages in that case. They're all very self-explanatory. Qualification is me finding out whether or not Steve's actually a customer. Yeah. Is that even a possibility, as an example? And that's where things start. And if you go down these, there's very simple definitions and meanings you can apply to those stages and say, it's in this stage if you're doing this. And it's very straightforward.
And some of the things you've talked about before that bugged me, but we won't get into it, that every business needs to have a very clear definition of who their best prospect is. What are those things? So if you got qualification, but you don't have what you're really looking for there, that's where you start mirroring these together, right?
Yes.
So you can go and say, well, we only work with people that are 6'3", and Willoughby's not 6'3", so he doesn't qualify necessarily. But if you don't have that conversation, if you don't know that, you may be wasting your time on a lot of people that aren't qualified, that aren't good prospects.
Right. Well, and that's the worst case scenario, right? You are literally paying your resources to focus on things that are not substantial to your business. They're meaningless because they are chasing individuals or businesses as clients that will lead to no revenue for your organization. They're not a fit to begin with. So when you look at qualification, one of the aspects of that stage that I always advise organizations to put in place is, what is a qualified client to you? What does that mean? You can go in generic terms like, the individual I'm talking to has the purchase authority to do this. They have the sense of urgency. Okay, that box is checked. They have the authority to actually do it within the organization. They can manage the deal. So you create those in a sort of back and forth process that we would work on so that it's as simple as possible. And that way, when you see a deal that you're looking at in your pipeline in the CRM or on the spreadsheet and it says it's qualified, you know that it's met those criteria.
Right.
If it has not, it's a lead. It's just a lead at that point. It's not even really in your pipeline.
One of the best presentations I've seen, and Lord, this was probably 25 years ago, but a young lady did a really nice job talking about time, interest, money. Because if you don't have the time, and we've all been there, that's a really great idea. We don't have the bad bandwidth right now to do it. So if you don't have the time, if you don't have the interest, and you don't have the money, it's all not going to come together for a deal.
Yeah, those are the three core concepts around. You could simply say qualification meets those things that you just described. Time, interest, money. Some companies, because of their own particular industry or whatever, like to come up with a catchy acronym in those. But however you want to do it, if it doesn't meet those criteria, and you should be able to talk to your sales team and basically ask how they meet those criteria, just to challenge that they do, in fact, and they're really qualified for your business.
So you talked about, and I don't know how deep you want to go into each of these classifications, but the qualifications, do they have the time, interest, money, and then discovery? And I think we could come up with 20 different terms that we could have instead of discovery.
Yes.
But probably instead of talking about that, what does discovery mean and what do you need to be talking about to that prospect?
Yeah, discovery in that case is really sort of the second date, right? Mm-hmm. It's you're getting to know a little bit more about that individual, you or organization in the corporate sense, and you are identifying the side and the parts of them that need the solution you're offering or the product that you're offering. In some ways, it's a period in which you are fanning out, depending upon the type of sale that you're doing, into an organization. There may be multiple buyers, as an example. You've got your champion buyer, that so it's qualified. Now you're trying to reach, say, the IT department, because the CIO's got to sign off. Well, newsflash, IT department is the department of no.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're going through that organization, essentially trying to get to a point where you can deliver a proposal to them. And hence the next stage is proposal. And one of the things that I like to bring up about these is you might think, well, okay, on that discovery thing, I don't want to just send a rep off into Wonderland. And, you know, for 6 months now, they've been discovering all the intricacies of Bass Pro, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. No, you for all of these, you do want to have less than time limiters on them. So, for example, the qualification stage, from the moment you're talking to the organization to qualification, let's just say as an example, that's less than 30 days. In the discovery phase, that's less than 60 days. So why is that important? Because you need to know and have visibility into how quickly things, or how not quickly things are moving through your pipeline. The pipeline is a pipeline. It is not a parking spot, right? It's not a huge parking lot that you just want to put 30 possible clients and work on them forever. So in that sense, you really want to understand. And if you're talking with the sales team and you've got, man, we have a ton of stuff in the proposal stage, which is great. You know, where are those proposals? Because I'm looking at half of these and they're over 90 days in the proposal stage. That's a blinking red light for you that there's something wrong with those deals. And, you know, I acknowledge everyone can get in different situations. If it's a family business, it's a different scenario, right? If it's a small business, but 500 employees with a dedicated sales team of, let's just say, 12 individuals and a sales leader, as an example, that leader is going to want to be sanitizing that pipeline constantly by saying, okay, you know, Joe, that one's been in proposal now a month over how long it's supposed to be there. So if it's not moving to contracting, then we're going to take it out of the pipeline. It's not going anywhere. So you have to have that discipline, which is why the concept of time is so important.
And you're not saying if it goes 31 days, it's done.
No.
But at 31 days, if it's a real deal, the salesperson's going to be able to explain why it's 31. Hey, he was on vacation for 3 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever, but we're going now. I'm expecting to get this email. Now it's happening. If it's 90 days, you got a salesman that just doesn't want to pull the trigger.
Right.
I mean, it just...
Right. That's right. It, because if he does or she does, suddenly their pipeline looks weak, right? And it's like, well, what are you doing?
Right, exactly.
So in those situations, too, something to, you know, keep in mind there is that your CRM, which is, you know, Salesforce is probably certainly the largest one out there. I heard something, back when I was in the business, that they have their annual conference every year, Salesforce does. And here's how big Salesforce is. The hotels in San Francisco where they're headquartered aren't numerous enough to hold all the attendees. So the last one, this was about 3 years ago that I heard, is they parked two cruise ships in the bay so they would have enough hotel space for people attending that trade show. I forget the I'm blanking on the name of that one now. I have, you know, HubSpot is another one that's gained a lot of notoriety recently, which is more of an online SaaS-based solution. But when you look at those as an example, you should have some mechanism to tell you as a leader when things are tripping these rules, these process rules that we're talking about. Steve, you looking at a pipeline report for the organization, it's not your job to memorize that pipeline week after week and interrogate the organization on it. And when I say interrogate, I'm saying that in the non-emotional sense, not like, you know, Gestapo interrogation or something like that, right? So in that situation, what do you want to see? You want to see the outliers. You want to focus on the ones that are either looking really good and about to close or ones that are tripping those timelines, as an example, and you're going to ask questions as to why they're still in the pipeline. And if your system can't automatically tell you those, I'm just going to say you're probably going to go nuts trying to go through each and every deal. You know, when I think we had a similar discussion around how you want to hold a meeting, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to sit down and review every single issue that you just talk about every week until blood's coming out of people's ears and eyes?
No. Right.
You want to focus on the priorities in those cases. And in the sales case, it's any outliers.
His name is Eric Reynolds. He's with Level 5 Consulting. You can learn more about him by going to LVL5, and that's LVL, the number 5, consulting.com. If you're on Facebook, find him at EQR Coach, and at LinkedIn, it's Eric Q. Reynolds. You're listening to the Level 5 Podcast. This is episode 6. We would encourage you to go back to listen. We haven't talked in a couple of weeks about the 5 levels of leadership. You can learn more at the website. But if you have a business and if you're struggling in sales, that's a leadership problem. If you're struggling with culture, that's a leadership problem. If you're struggling with anything, it's a leadership problem. And if it's not, then you're either teaching or allowing that to happen. So we believe, and Eric hasn't kicked me off the podcast yet, we believe all problems, they used to say all problems are sales problems because if you can fix your sales problems, you can fix problems. To me, all problems are leadership problems because if we don't own it, if we don't wrap our arms around it and say, yes, this is a my bad type of situation, then you can't fix it. I'm sure I can't be the only one listening to this podcast right now thinking, man, I really thought we kind of had it going on with this whole process. We really don't. There's probably some people going, I haven't even started this process. You could ask my sales team about these 5 different levels and they're not going to talk about, you're not going to find any uniformity, if that's a word, in their answers or anything like that. Talk to that person because the world's not going to end. They've got, if they're recognizing the problem, that's, you know, really step one, right?
Yeah.
How does Level 5 Consulting help someone like that in that situation?
Yeah. So in the cases where it's not something that's a common language, right? So if you're just looking at information on, okay, how many did Steve bring in this month? And how many did Joe bring in this month? And how many did Jane bring in this month? And, you've come to understand that, oh, you know, typically a good month is, you know, they brought in three that month. And if they keep bringing in three a month and you're happy with that, well, a couple things are going on there. One, you've sort of level three'd it. You've sort of settled. You're rationalizing that, no, that's a good month. So we'll leave it at that. Second, if they don't start come, if things begin to drop off, you realize in that moment that you're actually in a dark room.
Mm-hmm.
You other than asking the individual why things, what happened? You were clipping along, you know, for the past 13 months at three a month, sometimes four. You even had 1 5-month back there. How come we're down to one right now? What, you know, you haven't brought this, you know, what's going on? So you have to understand as a leader, that's a totally subjective conversation. It's not that you won't get good intel. Hopefully you will. Hopefully you have a candid rep that tells you what the problem is at that point, or even better, has proactively come to you and said, hey, you know, we have a problem. But in that case, that is when you realize, okay, I really don't have any insight into why something is going to come into my organization. You know, what is it that makes a great deal? What is it that makes a great customer? How do I even know a customer is qualified, you know, to come in to this business? So many times, Steve, they start out well, organizations start out well, and they do that year and a half run. And then things start to feel like it's heavier. It's like you've added another yoke on and you're really struggling to move things. You're working twice as hard to move it the same distance, if you will. And so what helps with that? Information helps with that. You just need to understand through a set of relatively uncomplicated steps here what factually is happening. So if you're into facts, you're into pipelines. That's pretty much the way I look at it.
Yeah, and if you're not into facts, then it becomes emotional, and now yes. It becomes, well, Eric and I don't really get along, so this conversation is going to be different than when I talk with Sharita because Sharita and I get along, you know, and that's no way to move forward. No sales rep should have to put up with that, but just the overall professional culture shouldn't be there either.
Spend some time with Sharita and find out what she's doing and then come back to me. Those types of conversations, right? Boy, oh boy, that person, you just started their path out the door, essentially, in that case, because you've kind of demonstrated that, okay, it's not going to be about process. It's going to be subjective. And yeah, that's going to be a tough go.
Or the other thing's going to happen. Steve's going to walk in, and Eric knows we need to let Steve go. This isn't going to work, but I don't have the numbers and facts to sit down with Steve and say,
yes.
Steve, this is why we're letting you go.
That's right.
Here's a month's pay. You know, go find a job that you really want to do.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that should never happen in one meeting, right? Everybody should be on the page knowing where that's going. But if you don't have facts, it's very difficult to do that.
Right. Yeah, you have... To your point, it's all emotional at that point, right? It's not working out. You're not a fit for the organization. Well, why am I not a fit for the organization? Well, you're not doing as good as Sharita is.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, there's just nothing. There's no sense of factual accountability to lean on at that point. And some of that gets back into the behaviors piece, which is critical as well. But just even based off of, you know, this external sales process, you could say that someone is clearly not following the rules.
So if we were sitting down and you were coaching me, I would probably talk in terms of, hey, we really started this company about 2 weeks before COVID hit, and then we had COVID happening, and we've kind of been in just a fist fight trying to get things going all the way through this. And in that situation, it's very difficult to sit down and put things together. There's other businesses that have that situation. There's also going to be some communication happening that it's getting tougher out there. I mean, we talked about that last week, and they're promising it's going to be tougher. And whether we buy into that or not buy into that, we have to take a step back and look at the market and go, okay, what's going on with the market and what can we expect and those types of things. all of that, again, points to having something like this that you can take the emotion out of it, or you can take the fear of the market out of it and really have an understanding of what's going on. So,
yeah. Yeah, you really don't want it to be an emotional situation. You know, it's and I'm certainly not advocating that you don't build emotional connections with your team members as you, you know, work with them and, you know, interact with them on a daily basis. If they're struggling, you need to, it's to their benefit to know why they're struggling. These types of steps, for example, the stages and the forecasts associated with those stages, those are essentially high level. When you look at the actual behaviors, if you will spot the problem in the pipeline, and then you can lean on the behaviors that you're expecting that individual to do to see if they're actually executing on the behaviors that you expect them to do. And if they're not, that's probably your issue. So it just helps drive a much more balanced approach with the team.
You talk about here the probability of the deal, and mm-hmm. every account management system has that probability, and usually it's 10%, 50%, 90%. I never put anything at 90%. I don't know if that's right, wrong, or indifferent. Maybe I'm just negative that way. But talk about those probabilities and what you like to see in the probabilities. And if that's too specific of a question, then what's your general advice to somebody when they're looking at probabilities there?
Yeah. So controversial take, perhaps, but my message to all the sales leaders and business owners out there is trash the probabilities.
Okay.
And let's role play for a second.
All
right. I'm the CEO. You're the head of sales. Hey, Steve, I've been looking at this deal that you've had out here in the pipeline. It's looking good. Shows it's in the contracting phase. What percentage would you put on that deal as far as, you know, its chance of coming in?
Yeah, I'm still probably that 50% level.
Okay. Why?
Because I put everything at 50%
exactly.
Because it's either yes or no, right?
Yes.
I mean, when it comes right down to
yes.
You're not going to let me put in a 73% deal, are you?
Right.
I'm either going
right.
to get that or it's going to be no.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so there's several humorous things about probabilities in sales forecasting. One of them is they do tend to fall into certain buckets.
Right.
And suddenly a CEO looks at it and goes, why is everything one of three percentages? Why? Because hearsay around the company has spread that that's what you want to put it in, because mm-hmm. that's how we do it, right? Maybe it's 85%, maybe it's 50, and maybe it's 35 or something like that. Secondarily is because it's all generally entirely arbitrary anyway, right? If I'm saying, oh, I'm 90%, I am hot on that deal. I am not. But let's flip back over to the energy leadership side. In some ways, I'm saying I'm leaving myself a 10% out,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Steve, sometimes the deals don't go the way I want them to. I'm not a miracle worker, whatever. It happened. We lost one type thing. So, and the last thing around the percentage thing that I think is always amusing is that deals can go from 15% to 90%. Because someone hasn't been updating Salesforce or their mm-hmm. CRM on a regular basis. And suddenly from 1 month to the next month, you're looking at it. Whoa, wow. What happened in that kid? Did your son marry their daughter or what? How did that deal go like that? So I have just
learned how to use the program and hit
90%.
That's
right.
All I did.
Yes. Or another one is some CRMs will force a certain percentage based on the stage. So for example, if you put it in proposal, it's automatically 50% because you've given them a proposal. It's a 50-50 chance. They either say yes or no, right? Really? I've seen a lot of sales guys in my time crank out proposals mm-hmm. like nobody's business to make it look like they're busy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't 50% proposals that are going out
no.
the door. Those
no.
are like 7%
no.
proposals.
Those aren't worth the pieces of paper that they're on, right?
And so, you know, it can be a real challenge in that case. So what I advocate instead, which is also a functionality in most CRMs, CRMs that you would find in the market, is a concept called forecast category. So the forecast category is pretty simple. There's four of them. Omit. There is best case. There is commit. And then I'm actually blanking on that early one. Pipeline. Thank you, dear piece of paper. Mm-hmm. So it actually in order, it goes omitted, pipeline, best case, and commit. So
I need help with the omitted.
Omitted simply means it's not in the pipeline, but I am talking to them.
Okay.
So it's because, you know, sometimes it takes, depending upon what you're actually selling, it could take a couple months just to qualify the client as a, or the prospect as a potential client. So you're noting that in the system that you're working on that organization, but the pipeline, the forecast category remains omitted.
Okay.
They're not technically in the pipeline at that point. When you go to the best case scenario in what I advocate, that's a situation where if everything goes the way I want it to, the deal closes. That's what you're saying by best case. So when you're looking at something in a proposal, as an example, if you've put a proposal out, if everything goes the way that you want to, in that case, you know, it's going to go out. But the real important one that's way better than percentages is commit. So when you get to the commit phase, you're putting essentially your skin on the line in the game as a sales individual to say, I'm committing to closing this deal. This is one that is tracking well. I've checked all the boxes. I am hereby stating that it's going to, I'm going to bring this deal in for the company. It's not saying there's a 90% chance that I'm going to bring this deal into the company. And so you are really establishing a different sort of mindset around the deals and letting the people who manage their own pipelines, the sales representatives. And if you've got, let's say you're the CEO and you've got a sales manager between you and the team, sales manager can overwrite these forecast categories as well. If they say, look, Steve, I know you got this at commit, but I ain't buying it. I've seen too many of these. We need to bump that back to best case because, you know, I don't want to walk into George and say, I'm committing to this deal. So there's a little bit of a parlay, if you will, between, you know, those. And it, what does that do? It helps keep it very sane for the CEO.
I want to walk through this again.
Yeah.
Omitted. Mm-hmm. Hey, I met a guy named Eric. I really think there's some opportunity there. We're meeting for coffee on Tuesday, but it's omitted right now. But yeah. I am working on this.
Yep.
Okay. Eric and I have coffee. Everything looks good. Now he's in the pipeline.
Yes. They are qualified. The moment they're qualified, they're okay. In the pipeline.
Okay. When does best case kick in?
Best case can kick in after. I generally, as a sales leader, would not allow best case until the later part of a discovery phase. So if they're in discovery and they put it to best case, they're going to have to explain to me why it's best case. I'll give you an example. If it's a sister corporation of one you've already sold, so you've got a good relationship, the other company that's already bought is a good reference customer. It's just a really good scenario to go in best case early on, because if everything goes the way it should, you're going to get that particular deal. So that's when I would allow something like that.
Okay.
If it's a new and someone's slapping it in discovery as a best case deal, I'm going to have a lot of questions on that. I'm probably going to push that back to pipeline.
Okay.
Until they get to the proposal phase.
And then commitment is a situation that, hey, Eric and I have talked, he's liking it, he's getting sign off at the business. I'm all in on closing this deal.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm not all in at the pipeline stage, but still that's a different, we're playing at a different level.
Yeah.
At that particular point.
And with the commit, you, to your point, you have gotten the verbal close.
Okay.
Right. You have asked the question. And again, depending upon the type of sale, because with some sales, you have a single buyer, with some, you have multiple buyers. You would not want to commit to a deal unless you've covered multiple buyers, right? All the buyers in that organization. So But if you think about it again, backing up from the leadership side of things, it's empowering for the sales team members to be able to call these shots themselves. And it's also a level of accountability sure. that they have to get used to for themselves. Nobody told them to put that deal into committed. And if you're a sales manager that's saying, hey, Steve, I like what you got here, but I need to move three of these deals into commit, and I need to have them closed by the end of the month. You're a suicidal sales leader at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it has this intrinsic thing that happens with individuals when they actually click the drop down and select the word commit on an opportunity. That's a big deal. Not only for their own benefit, they're going to get most likely commissioned on it, right? That's going to mean money for them, but they're also signifying to the organization that, hey, this is going to happen. And once you do that, very hard at that point to be constantly switching back, right? If it doesn't happen, say, oh, you know what? I got to drop that back to best case because this happened. I'm not going to say it does. Scenarios like that don't play out occasionally, but if that's the norm or that's even any kind of frequency, there's a different issue there.
Now, when we have that conversation, we have something to talk about.
Yes.
Steve, yeah. 50% of your deals you put in commit isn't happening.
Doesn't happen. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so when you think about forecast category, what this is called, the other nice thing about this is where the percentages come in. This is where you build your forecast. So over time, this has always kind of been interesting to me, CRMs will have built in assumptions on if you have something at this level, let's say your forecast category is commit, then whatever dollar amount that is, let's say it's $750,000 you have in commit, chances are 75% of that is coming into your organization as revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they put those in there from the start. I work with every organization to make sure that they litmus test those themselves. You have to get a feel for what that actually means for your organization. Now, if you're putting things in commit and it usually translates into 60% of those turn into revenue, again, you've got a challenge there, right? That's not really what the word commit means. Certainly, I don't think, my wife Jen would appreciate that level of commitment, right?
Right.
So,
what is that for you? I mean, not on the personal level with Jen. What is that for you on the business level? Is that 85? Is that 95? Where do you start feeling comfortable with that?
Great question.
Because things happen.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to lose deals for whatever reason.
The answer to that, generally, the default that I recommend going with is 90%.
Okay.
If someone has committed, at 90% of the time, that deal should happen as it's written and stated in the CRM, right?
Yeah, because if you've been on a few sales calls, you can commit to somebody or somebody can commit to you and you kind of know they just wanted me out of that office. I mean, this isn't a real deal. If this was a Saturday night, I'm supposed to be ready at 7. I'm not going to worry about it because this ain't happening at 7 o'clock, right?
Or that exact thing happens that you're talking about and the person makes a mental decision of, I know it ain't happening, but I'm not going to let everybody else know it ain't happening until after the pipeline meeting, right?
Right. And really, that's where the culture can really get into that because, sometimes around here, I like, man, we get a lot of pushback. But the pushback is always meant not as a personal or whatever. But we say this. We say we're doing this and we're actually doing this over here.
Yes.
It isn't lining up. And the same can be happening in this situation.
And you have to understand, to the point you're making, the downstream effects of that, right? One of the things that, I don't know if you've ever been in an organization where you've heard this, and I have a real intriguing story about how I ever got into sales in the first place. I was in an operational capacity and was at a trade show with a large pharmaceutical manufacturer, and the sales rep that I worked with for that pharma manufacturer, and they changed the terms of the deal at the last minute and basically added oh, I don't know, around, you know, twice the level of effort on our side. And the sales rep went ahead and said, okay, fine, we'll do it. And then he told me about it. And then I went ballistic, basically, as opera. We're not going to be able to deliver this. There's no way we can meet these timelines, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so he said to me, don't get mad at me because you're not in sales. That was his message that he gave me. And I thought, what, you know, I didn't, and we went right past it, but it stuck with me in there. And it was like, you know, it actually is, I was thinking, you know, if I was in sales and I was, if I did have that integrity and I did deliver good deals to the company, what a difference that would make for an organization. You know,
yeah.
It, what he said made no sense. No. It was an egotistical, you know, whatever, but
it sounds like a few sales remarks maybe I have made in the past, however, yeah. Be honest,
yes,
with you.
Yeah.
Way back,
yeah,
in the day.
Don't shoot, know, the messenger.
Yeah.
You know, those types,
yeah,
of things, right?
Exactly.
What do you mean messenger? You built this deal,
right?
You know?
Right.
So, but when you look at that and you have those types of things happening with an organization, you can get a lot of sort of backroom discontent building because they feel like sales always gets away with it or something along those lines, right? When you have strong internal and external sales processes, there's a clear level of accountability there. And back to what I was saying earlier about using the CRM to your advantage, you, Steve, don't want to sit there and go through every deal in the pipeline for a 2.5-hour pipeline meeting. No, you want to look at the outliers, and that CRM can tell you who's taken their forecasts from commit to best case,
mm-hmm,
or from best case to pipeline, or heck, it's suddenly best case or commit and then omitted.
Yeah.
That type of thing. You can pull those things up in the snap of a finger, and that gives you extreme intelligence on your sales team.
His name is Eric Reynolds. He is owner-operator of Level 5 Consulting. You can learn more about that organization and how it can benefit your organization at LVL5consulting.com. That's LVL5, the number 5, consulting.com. Eric, let's get real. We are talking to people that really their training period is, we've hired your happy ass, go sell something, to we, you know, it's, we load you up so much with all these forms, you're not even going to talk to a client, don't worry about it. I mean, you got all of this training and all of this, mm-hmm, stuff. Clearly, I'm talking about the two edges, but there's a lot in the middle. If people need help, but maybe they're embarrassed, or maybe they don't think they have the time, interest, and money to work with Level 5 Consulting. Again, take them through that process. What's going to happen there? Yeah. How much time are they going to invest to find out if they want to move or not move? What do they need to have kind of in their pipeline to be a business that could really benefit from Level 5 Consulting?
Yeah, so all kinds as far as the pipeline sizes for sure. But in that initial conversation, we've talked about it. I mentioned it earlier. There's no shame in what's gone on. I know businesses get to where they are for a variety of reasons that are valid as they've gone through time. And many of them have been very successful for a period of time. And then slowly it's like that engine is just winding down and suddenly you're out of lower gears to drop into, to get up the mountain in those cases. So I'm going to listen on the details of, you know, what you want to share with me in the first conversation, and then make a simple recommendation of, you know, here's how I think I can help, and here's what we need to do for me to validate that. You know, we'll take it at a pace that you want to go at in that scenario. But I think you'll find when it comes to things like sales processes, which, again, these are into the mechanics of things.
Yeah, you've had several meetings. This isn't meeting one we're talking about.
Right.
Let's remember, we're in episode 6. So you're not going to first call, well, tell me, right, about your pipeline and how you do that,
right,
big boy.
How many forecast categories do you have, yeah, John? Wrong answer.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
But no, it's a gradual, I don't want to send anyone home after our first conversation going, oh my God, I've fallen so far behind that, you know, there's no way, even with a simple approach to this, that I could catch up. You know, that's not the case. And the reality is, we are going to talk about leadership first. We are going to sort of assess what you've got with yourself and your team there. And then as we go along, we'll get into some of these mechanics.
Let's talk about that business, or to that business, though, that maybe hasn't had to worry about this. Mm-hmm. I can think of one, and we won't walk down that road, but somebody that really had a strong individual in sales. They really did a great job. They were the kind of go-to person, and they passed away. And while I don't want to say that there wasn't other people behind to, but I don't think it was strong enough. So you can be in situations. I mean, obviously we wish he hadn't passed away, but he could have moved, or she could have moved, or whatever that's like. Having this type of detail in your sales process really gives you the opportunity to develop that bench.
Yeah.
And as I think back on the 80s and 90s, developing that bench was just really finding kind of more hotshot salespeople to send out there. I mean, and not every industry and not every business, but there were a lot of businesses that was the mindset, you know. They were pretty, they were nice, they were assertive, they were able to go out there and talk the talk and do all of those things. And as long as we kept those things coming, that's great. We're in a different time in sales now. I mean, it really is a different time. So, again, I'm not sure there's a question there other than that's another reason to have these type of systems.
It's a great point. I mean, I never really thought of it in that scenario that you just brought up. But it's a way to ensure that you've got continuity, right? And because you're going to have a lot of sort of reconnaissance you're going to have to do after an event like that to even figure out what the formula was.
Right.
That was leading to your success.
Right.
So when you have these things documented, you know, you're able to really build up an organization. And if people come and people go, you've got the blueprint for them to be successful when the new ones come in.
Eric and I both believe in the power of small business people. That is one of the things we talk about here at Ozarks Dynacom, and I know Eric believes that at the Level 5 podcast. And part of that belief is helping them really generate what they need to do in order to add more value to their customers and add more customers and really grow. Because, you know, we're in an interesting time in this world and in this society, and you know, I kind of believe that the power of small business is one of the ways to get us out of this whatever situation we're in now.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why we wanted to do the Level 5 podcast, so we could talk about these things. We could introduce you to Eric, and Eric would have an opportunity to explain this. Do this every week and want to continue on. You know, Eric, while he is well-read and well-studied, His caboose has been in the seat that is required to bring dollars in. He's probably been up at nights a few times going, how do I have this conversation, or I've got to let somebody go tomorrow, or I've got to bring somebody new, or whatever those things are going through his head. It's not a situation that, you know, he just became a consultant because that was the easy way to go. You really got into this Level 5 and was learning it on the job, and it kind of changed your world a little bit through your wife. And then you said, hey, I want to do this for other people. Talk about that a little bit. Yeah. Expand on that story.
Yeah, it's a case of where, you know, the corporate success that I have had in sales was something that revolved around Level 5 leadership, even though I had no idea what that meant at the moment. And fortunately for me, with my upbringing, it was as straightforward as sort of, you know, not asking others to do things that I wouldn't do myself. And at the same time, not taking the team in any direction where we all didn't agree we should go. And so there was leadership by consensus, and there was, you know, the knowing when to make the call, you know, myself, and knowing that the teams would look to me to make that call by myself and take that responsibility. So becoming a coach and going through the training and realizing all the other aspects of why that stuff mattered really helped me get into the mindset of sales individuals. And I've always found one of the things most intriguing, because we talk about level one and the fear and sort of the gremlins that can go on with level one. You know, people will scoff at, oh, God, as a salesperson. Oh, sales. You know, there's a salesperson. Well, no matter what the sales environment is. And the reality is, being in sales can at times be the toughest time to believe in humanity, because a lot of people make promises to you as mm-hmm. a sales individual and don't follow through with them, right? So it's kind of an ironic flip that actually is occurring there by the numbers, the sheer numbers of individuals that say, yeah, we can have a phone call, or yes, we can have a meeting, or, you know, those types of things. So the coaching helps keep all of that in perspective. And when I work with organizations, I'm now, versus just seeing the mechanics of it, like you said, have experience in, I can also see the energy dynamic that's going on that makes such a big difference and is really the foundation of where everything has to start.
So when you're coming in at level five, it's not a situation that you're coming in with a cocky attitude saying, I can fix you.
Yeah,
that's not even in your mindset. It's mm-hmm. how can I help you, and yeah. how can we move this forward?
Yeah.
You know,
it's going to be a process where you're going to discover as an organization or an individual, how nice it is to have the truth. that really, at the end of the day, that's what this whole journey is about, is being comfortable looking at the truth of the matter. And what does a level five individual believe about, you know, things that go right and things that go wrong? There is equally as exciting, right? If you go through and set yourself up with that mindset, problems, great things happening, deals failing, deals closing, it's all opportunity for you. Things will begin to change dramatically.
We had a situation here, and I know we got to wrap up, but we had a situation here that we had a day not too long ago, a couple of days, everything was a challenge. You know, mm-hmm. It was either just flat out wrong or a challenge. And the individual said, I just don't know how, why it has to be this way. And I said, where we're wanting to go, I mean, we're barely a level one right now compared to where we want to go. And I wasn't talking about Eric's levels. I'm just talking where we are as a company.
Yeah.
So we're going to have challenges. You say you want to go to the next level. You know what? It's at the next level. Next level challenges.
Yes.
So let's not waste time. Let's not be stupid and repeat a bunch of stuff. But we ain't crying about challenges. Let's get them handled and let's move forward.
Yeah.
And I know that's, you know, Rudy or Zig Ziglar or whoever you want to say it, but that's the mindset. And I think we rob from people, successful people that put up with those challenges and pains in the butts and all of that as a part of their daily life. We just think, well, why are we being bothered by that? That's part of the admission.
That's part of it. And there is, when I say that I get as excited about the things that go wrong as the things that go right, I'm saying that factually.
Yeah.
I'm not saying if, you know, something like I got in a car accident or something, I would be joyous about it in that scenario. But when you think about the information that any event in your life provides you, and you look at that and say, okay, how can I progress forward using this? That's really where, you know, because a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to leverage success after success after success to keep going forward. There's a lot of people in history that leverage failure after failure after failure to propel themselves forward till they finally got to the destination that they thought they wanted to be. And then they realized, well, there's no real here, so I'm just going to keep going. So, yeah.
His name is Eric Q. Reynolds. He is at level5consulting.com. That's LVL5consulting.com. You can find him on Facebook at EQR Coach or on LinkedIn at Eric Q. Reynolds. Time flies by. I always have a lot of fun. Thanks
always
for doing
pleasure.
This. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Steve.